Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Give him a throw one. Oh, it's, yeah, well. Okay, I'll just do this. And you would have thought that the answer to this would be, as Joe was telling me earlier, you know, the questions in a title are always false or negative. So hopefully you won't get that connotation from the beginning. But just to sort of, you know, provide a bit of an overview for where I want to go with this, and also provide at least a little bit of motivation, or at least inspiration for where Tom might go. I think that a lot of us, and at least in the new physics community, have been looking at, you know, how is electroweak symmetry broken, and with that goes a number of different questions. But is there a Higgs? We certainly know there are three Goldstone bosons that get absorbed by the W's and Z's, and they have to come from somewhere. But is there actually a full doublet of this? And then if there is, meaning both the Goldstones itself and the excitation above the minimum, is it composite? And you would have thought that this would have been answered a long time ago, sort of in one direction or another. But I think by the end of this talk, hopefully you'll see that in fact this is actually a realistic possibility. So, you know, Zoltan gave a nice overview of the standard model from yesterday, and so I'll just sort of have a few little pieces to say about it here. The few pieces include, first of all, what does the Higgs really do for us in the standard model? Yeah, and it does a whole bunch of things all at the same time, which makes it highly economical. Yeah, it of course gives the W and Z masses, they are the Goldstone bosons that we talked about just before. You can write down fermion masses with a Higgs doublet, and that's straightforward. The excitation, the Higgs itself, the thing that LHC is trying to search for, and Telvitron as well, of course, but LHC should be definitive on this, unitarized W scattering, and this is of course an important thing as to whether this particle exists or not. And as I said, Tom will go into theories where this becomes a problem if you don't have that excitation in your theory. And finally, precision electroweak does seem to be consistent with the idea that there is this extra scalar in the theory, and we now know that its mass is constrained to, you know, 200, 250 GeV or so.
So may I ask a very naive question?
Yeah.
What is your definition of a Higgs boson?
What is my definition of a Higgs?
I can give one.
What do you mean by definition?
I understand.
Uh-huh.
You spoke about in general.
Uh-huh.
No,
I'll be going beyond the standard model very quickly. So a Higgs is a scalar field that gets a vacuum expectation value that breaks electroweak symmetry. Well, in this case, we've got a single complex Higgs doublet, so obviously some of them get absorbed.
So my definition is that you have a remaining particle together with the Higgs boson,
right.
Non-trivial group theory complex.
Right, right.
Otherwise, you can have so many scalars all around in the world that they are not called Higgs bosons, right?
Uh-huh.
What makes a scalar particle a Higgs boson? That's my question. So
right.
You should have some connection to the boson, because otherwise it's not a Higgs boson.
Yeah, you could say that. Sure. Or the other way of saying it is, imagine that I have a series of scalar fields, and they all have expectation values. Then if I, as I start turning off expectation values, if I turn them all off, then electroweak symmetry is preserved. It's now the vacuum preserves it. So if I have some scalar that has some expectation value, but the electroweak symmetry is still unbroken, then obviously this is not connected. Yeah. So that's a good operational definition that I would use. Okay, so the Higgs does lots of good things for us, and this is why we think that it would be around in the model. But as we all know, there's a series of things why at least the Higgs seems problematic. One of them is the usual argument about why there should be new physics not far from the electroweak scale, namely that if I try to write diagrams that would lead to the renormalization of the Higgs mass square, this is like the doublet mass square, which determines the electroweak breaking scale itself, then these are quadratically divergent in the sense that if I cut off my theory at some scale and I ask, you know, what is the scale I would write down for these, then I'm going to get something like lambda squared over 16 pi squared if these coefficients are order 1 as they are in the standard model. So renormalization with top quarks, with the top quark Yukawa, the quartic coupling, and with gauge couplings. Electroweak symmetry is also sort of broken by hand in the standard model, meaning I just put in this potential with some mass squared, make it the right sign, and I'm done. If I put the wrong sign in, then it doesn't break. Okay, now you may think, well, that's just a discrete choice, but this is something that I think is worthwhile to think about. Finally, of course, we have this Higgs in the model, and we've never seen scalars before that are fundamental. Maybe because of this problem. And so this is something to at least keep in your mind. And you've heard this before by people who will talk about Technicolor. And indeed, you'll see that I will end up talking about Technicolor shortly. Now, you might say, and this is, have we seen this before, this notion of having a scalar particle in the theory? It seems to be there, and yet it has a problem. Sort of as a one transparency summary, we can just say like this. So if you go back to like the 1950s and you say, well, what was the situation at that time? You say, well, okay, let's write out all of the interactions I need to describe the phenomena that one had around. Now, some of the phenomena include the strong force and the weak force, and by this I mean the strong force binding nucleons together, but also something that leads to radioactive decay, the weak force plus electromagnetism, etc. So if you just wrote down an effective theory at that time, what you would do is, well, put in the fields that I have in the model, namely protons and neutrons and pions, write down interactions like this for the pions to connect the protons and neutrons, write down some interaction that would lead to radioactive decay of, say, the neutron, and here's something where, because of the dimensions of these fields that I put in, this has to be a dimension 6 operator, so it has to be suppressed by some cutoff, lambda squared. Of course, we now know what this is. We know this is MW, but at that time, this is what you would have done. You would have just cut off your theory and said, here's where it is. And of course, there has to be a mass for the pion itself. But the pion was itself a field that is that was, at least at that time, considered to be fundamental. And it had to have a mass that was of order 100 MeV, otherwise the binding energies wouldn't work out properly. But this suppressed interaction to lead to neutron decay had to be suppressed by something of order 100 GeV, or at least with hindsight we know this for sure, that this is what it had to be, assuming order 1 coefficient here. So this at least leads you to think, well, wait, well, what protected pions from a quadratic divergence? Because I can certainly write down something naive like this sort of diagram, that would lead to a problem. And then, well, we all know what the resolution is, but I want to flash it because you'll see that this comes up again for new physics. And the resolution was sort of a combination of things. One is that, of course, pions were realized to be pseudo-Goldstone bosons of a spontaneously broken SU2 isospin. So this allowed us to understand why they were light relative to, say, protons, relative to a chiral symmetry breaking. But beyond this scale, we needed something to take over the theory. Okay, basically, you can think of these things as, I can write down a nonlinear sigma model suppressed by some interaction, suppressed by the scale, this chiral symmetry breaking, but then that is an effective theory that breaks down at this scale, and I have to take it over, and we all know that it's, of course, QCD that did this. So in some sense, what one can say is that there was both symmetries and dynamics is what protected the pion mass from getting a quadratic divergence. So this, at least with this sort of historical, with hindsight, this sort of historical thinking, one could then go and say, well, you know, could the Higgs do the same thing? Are we going to see some combination of both symmetries or dynamics or both that will lead to protecting its mass from getting a quadratic divergence? Okay. Sorry, what?
I don't understand this analogy. Why you have a lot of mass?
Because that provided.
Because when you shoot, no, because there is no reason a priori why you would want to be able to integrate your nuclear group or the reaction down. That's something else. It's a strong interaction issue, the one pion mass for that interaction.
If you were just doing effective yield theory and you knew about the existence of nucleon decay, you would have to write this operator in the theory and it's dimension 6.
But if you know that the plane is a Boltzmann model, you get a nonlinear signal.
Uh-huh. I could have put the Planck mass. The reason I put nucleon decay because this is something that we actually observe. So this is a real scale that we have in the theory. So in other words, I need to take these constituents, protons and neutrons, and seemingly make them in an effective theory that is good up to that scale, because that would be the scale where I need to write this new interaction. At least that's what you would have thought at that time. Yeah. So if you like, you could argue going all the way to the Planck scale, but I'm saying here's something even more physical. I mean, I've got this operator with some order one coefficient that I have to put into the theory to lead to radioactive decay. Okay. So the question then is, if this is what happened, well, can we use symmetries or dynamics or both to then try to protect the Higgs mass in an analogous way? Well, dynamics usually goes under the name of technicolor. And here, the idea, without going into any detail, or otherwise I'll face with the same problem that Edmund was telling about earlier, running out of time, that is. But here, just to get you, you know, aligned in the right direction for what I'm thinking about, the idea is, of course, there is some new symmetry analogous to QCD that has some fields associated with it, that when it gets strong, it confines and breaks electroweak symmetry. And this is something that has been, you know, a very interesting way of doing it. QCD worked. QCD would have done this, but it left us with W and Z masses of, you know, tens of MeV. So it was phenomenologically unacceptable, but it is at least possible that there could be a new symmetry that would do the same thing. Okay? In this sort of framework, in this way of thinking, there wouldn't be a neutral scalar in the theory, because basically, the low-energy effective theory would be something which would have just these Goldstones, and the would-be Higgs is something that you can think of as being some excitation sitting up at where the strong dynamic scale is. But this has been well known to have a whole series of problems of which have not gone away. One is simply that the strong scale for this to happen has to be of order, a 2 TeV or so. And the reason for this scale is just if I want to look at W scattering and I need to unitarize this without this Higgs field, then this is going to get strong out of order a few TeV. So something has to take over here, and it has to be this dynamics. Secondly, if you try to write fermion masses in this game, this is again going along these different legs for what the standard model was able to do, you find again a conflict. And the conflict basically boils down to extracting the proper fermion mass out, putting in appropriate interactions that would lead to fermion masses in the first place. That is, extracting the right fermion masses out while also avoiding dangerous processes like flavor-changing neutral currents. And the scaling goes like I've shown here, but I won't go into this in detail. Finally, of course, the problem with technicolor is that you can't calculate a strong coupling, and so you always worry about whether the symmetry is actually broken or not. Namely, which way does the vacuum align? Okay, so is electroweak symmetry really broken in such a theory? So you might think then that a way around this would be to still think about technicolor, still think about Goldstone bosons that are composite, but not just Goldstone bosons, but an entire doublet of fields. Okay, and this was actually proposed a long time ago by, among others, at least the papers that I'm most familiar with, is George I. Kaplan from 84 or so. And they had a model which you could write down a theory in which you actually had a full doublet of SU2 cross SU1 that would survive below the technicolor scale. This has obvious immediate advantages to just doing technicolor by itself. Okay, so W scattering is now unitarized by this extra scalar that is in the theory, even though it's composite at some high energy scale, some thing of the technicolor. You can imagine pushing the technicolor scale much beyond 2 TeV, again, because this W scattering is unitarized by the exchange of the Higgs. There's no restriction to hold it right at 2 TeV. Okay, so this will sort of alleviate things like the tension between fermion masses in FCNC and alleviate also tension with precision electroweak, okay, which comes here. Now, there is a Higgs in the spectrum. There is something to search for. And you would only reveal its compositeness once you got to scales where this the strong dynamics actually appear, this lambda technicolor. Okay, so at least it was possible that you could do among, you know, solve many of these problems all at the same time if you just went to this sort of composite Higgs model. Okay, so you might say, well, why didn't people talk about this all the time, or bring it up recently? But the catch is that you still face a problem in that if I want to move the technicolor scale very heavy, in this way of doing it, the electroweak scale to the technicolor scale is not stabilized, so there's a fine tuning of one part in phi electroweak over lambda technicolor. So you can improve over something like just the standard model. If I imagine putting the technicolor scale 1,000 TeV, that will avoid all of the FCNC problems and the electroweak problems, but I'll still end up with, you know, huge fine tuning, and it seems unnatural to think that this would be, in the end, the solution. Okay. There's also the issue that you still can't calculate at strong coupling in a non-supersymmetric theory like this. So you face the issues of whether the vacuum does indeed align in an electroweak breaking direction. Okay. All right. So this is the background for sort of strong coupling theories and composite theories. Now, I haven't talked about supersymmetry. That is the other way of doing this. Let me get this there. Partly because I tend to assume that most people are even more familiar with this than they are with the other theories. But, and of course, supersymmetry is a distinct possibility to make go. It does have certain well-defined predictions that are thought to exist. For example, that the Higgs mass itself shouldn't be too heavy. This basically boils down to the nature of getting a potential out of supersymmetry. It's the quartic coupling is related to the gauge couplings. And this provides some bound on the Higgs mass, depending on what particular framework you're in, but it's not that far from the current Lepp bound. But there's a more difficult problem. This is something that, among others, for example, Riccardo Barbieri has been talking about, which is the paradox, or the Lepp paradox, as he would call it, of why it is that we haven't found superpartners, and yet, and we also have to raise the superpartner masses themselves to get above the bound on the Higgs mass, yet that causes a fine tuning, an intrinsic fine tuning, to get out the electroweak scale. So there's sort of a combination, there's a tension between these two things. So let me try to explain this in more detail, because this has been presented before in different contexts, but it's good to sort of see it again, I think, once. So the Higgs mass in supersymmetry goes like a tree level piece, like mz squared. This is the maximal value I would get out, plus a radiative correction, which is dominantly from tops and stop loops. And there are other pieces to this, but this is the largest piece with the top u cow to the fourth power, because I'm looking for a quartic coupling out of getting the Higgs mass. So you can then just plug in numbers for the stop masses and figure out how heavy they have to be such that I pull the Higgs mass of supersymmetry above the Lepp bound. And you find that they have to be, you know, order 500-700 GeV or so before this is above 115. Okay, so once I go to, say, 500-700 GeV stop masses, or even heavier in some cases, depending on, you know, what tan data you're at, et cetera, up to perhaps a TeV or so, this means that these heavy stops will cause a renormalization of the uptype Higgs mass. Okay, here it is, mh up squared, and it gets a renormalization that goes like, and this is just like the logarithmic divergence associated with calculating loop diagrams of the soft Higgs mass squared. And it goes like, well, the top Yukawa, just like this guy did, but now goes like the stop mass squared times a log of scales, okay, log divergent. So this extra stop mass piece, these stop masses, because they have to be above, say, 700 GeV or so, causes a relatively large effect on delta mh up squared. And then when I want to compute what is the electroweak VEV, or analogously the mass of the Z, it comes out to be this relation, which is true for tan beta larger than a few, and it goes like a supersymmetric mass squared, here minus mh up squared. So I have to take this quantity, the soft mass of the uptype Higgs mass, a little bit larger but negative in comparison to mu to get out mz. Okay, this tension between these two pieces, this cancellation, now has to be at a level of about 1% such that the MSSM works. Okay, and this is all coming from the bound on the Higgs mass that came from LEP. So there really is a tension in supersymmetry at a level of about 1%, a fine-tuning of about 1%. Okay. Now, is that something to be worried about? That's the question. And you have to sort of decide for yourself what you think about it at that point. Okay, it may be fine. And in fact, if someone goes out and tells me, if LHC finds a Higgs at 120 GeV, okay, then that's probably fine. And that's just, you know, it's just an accident and that's the way it is. Okay. But if you actually go out and find that the Higgs is not there and is much heavier, you measure the mass of this particle, you find it's 150 or 200 GeV, you really then have to wonder about what is the solution to the hierarchy problem. Is it supersymmetry or is it something else? And if you find a Higgs, you know it's not obviously some, you know, technicolor of the usual type, so there has to be some way of going further. So the question is there any way to understand a heavier Higgs mass and yet also understand the nature of the hierarchy problem? So that leaves me with this picture. And like, just like Ed was saying, I run short on time as I go through this. So let me try to go through this at least briefly so you see how it goes. So what I'm going to talk about is a different way of doing it. And the way of doing it is analogous, or at least is quasi-analogous to what I was talking about before with pions. Namely, there's a combination of symmetries and dynamics is what stabilizes the mass. In this case, it's supersymmetry that provides the symmetries, or provides the stability of the electroweak scale against the technicolor scale. And then there's dynamics that really protect the mass above this, because the Higgs is actually composite. Okay. Now, what would a theory look like of this type? Well, here it is. Okay. So what we came up with was a model in which you had, here's the electroweak group, SU2 left, and U1 hypercharge, and there's some new group, and it gets strong. Okay, so this is technicolor. Here, I'm imagining the group is SU2. There are some fields charged under both SU2 left and SU2 technicolor, just like there are some fields under technicolor and under the hypercharge, and then some other fields that are not charged under either. And here their quantum numbers just look like this. Okay. I've drawn it in this diagram. Those who are familiar with this sort of notation, which may be very few of you, but if you are, this is what I'm drawing here. You can think of as like a bifundamental under these two groups. Okay. This is also analogously to like this. I would have drawn one line if I had drawn SU2 right here. Okay. So I have all of these fields charged under SU2 technicolor. So then I want to ask, I want to imagine that this group does get strong. In other words, its gauge coupling is large enough that as you run down, just like QCD gets strong at some scale, this is arranged to get strong at some scale lambda technicolor. This is a free parameter in the model, which could be traded for the gauge coupling of the SU2 technicolor, if I like. Okay. This theory has three flavors, or six doublets, okay, two colors, and a two-color, three-flavor theory is known from Seiberg to be one that has a dynamically generated superpotential. And this is what it looks like. Okay. So it's actually the Pfaffian of the meson mass matrix here, M, divided by lambda cubed to get the dimensions right. Pfaffian is just this totally anti-symmetric combination of these meson composites. Here, these mesons, M, are then just combinations of these Ts, Ti, Tj. Okay.
Yes, you know something about this, the spectrum of the T1, T2, T4?
Do we know something of the spectrum? Yes, you'll see that soon. Yeah. Is there another question? Okay. All right. Okay, so these are the states in the theory. Now, there are, this is not enough, but this is already on our way to see where I'm going to go with this. The fact that I generate the superpotential dynamically. So there is a series of things one needs to do. One is to add a mass term for this fifth and sixth flavor. This was the extra flavors that were not charged under SU2 left or U1 hypercharge. Okay, it's actually exactly this mass that will lead me to be able to separate the electroweak breaking scale from this technicolor scale. And the fact that it's a supersymmetric mass means that it doesn't get a quadratic divergence. It's just a parameter which I can sort of tune, if you will, to give me the right scale. Think of this analogous to the mu parameter in the MSSM. Okay? Just like in the mu parameter I had to set to be of order the electroweak breaking scale, here I will also have a parameter, although it will not be exactly the electroweak breaking scale. There is a series of other things. Yeah, these are all chiral superfields. Yeah, T5, T6, exactly. Yeah. There are a series of other terms that one adds. One thing when you consider an issue to Technicolor model, you have to worry about whether indeed you break electroweak symmetry or not. And in this case, unlike in non-supersymmetric Technicolor, you can force that the vacuum must go into a direction which breaks electroweak symmetry. Here's how you do it. You actually just write out a series of terms. This is a direction that would not, and this is also a direction that would not break electroweak symmetry, because these are this is a electroweak singlet here. So I just sort of add a singlet field like this, and then the f-flatnesses of supersymmetry forces that these expectation values are zero. So electroweak symmetry is broken, and you know it's broken in this theory. You know that it confines, and you know what the superpotential is, and all of this is due to the power of having supersymmetry as you go through the strong dynamic scale. Okay, last sort of technical slide, so you see what this looks like. So here it is again, but now I've canonically normalized the fields, canonically normalized the meson composites. So there is a piece, again, that goes like this Pfaffian here of M, which is this anti-symmetric combination of the mesons. There is a mass term for the fifth and sixth flavors, which I added. And here's what it looks like after I canonically normalize. It's something that goes, it has the M, which it had to have had before. But then after I do the rescaling, it looks like M lambda technicolor. And then the 4 pi squared comes from doing naive dimensional analysis on this. Okay. The coupling here, lambda, which is some coupling of these fields, this just a superpotential coupling, like a Yukawa coupling, is order 4 pi. And this you know also because at the strong dynamic scale, if you applied naive dimensional analysis, this is what you get. There are a series of other fields here, which I'm not going to talk about. They're spectators. They don't play any role in the dynamics. But they would be fields that you would search for if you had a collider high enough to actually get to lambda technicolor. OK, so you can then now look at the meson composites and identify what they are in the low energy theory. So one which is I call Ti, T3, where I is 1 and 2. Ti, T4, and T5, T6. These guys have electroweak quantum numbers of 2.5, or in other words, looks like an up-type Higgs doublet. Another one here, which looks like a down-type Higgs doublet, and this one, which is a singlet. Put this into the superpotential, and you get the thing at the bottom. So let's just stare at this for a minute. Okay, so this is all of this technology was put in to get to this point. Here is a superpotential, which involves the Higgs up-type and down-type. Higgs superfields. It goes like the following. It has a linear term in the singlet n, this coupling lambda, which is 4 pi at the strong dynamic scale, but then it's minus this constant v naught squared, which depended on this mass m that I put in. But you see now that even without supersymmetry breaking, I forced this to get an expectation value of order of v naught. So you break electroweak symmetry, and you break it dynamically at a scale which is tunable by this parameter m. Okay, so this achieves exactly what I was set out to do, the idea of having technicolor at a strong scale. It breaks electroweak symmetry, but the expectation value is hierarchically lower, just like this.
Just, will you remind me, if you think the MSSM is like a singlet,
yeah.
Then we have a new feature with superpotential from that field that you don't...
You could have done this even...
You did that already, right? So that's what I'm asking. So you have a linear term...
That's right.
And the new feature that you couple the Higgs also there.
So you could have done this. You could have written this down, and then I'll tell you exactly what you would find. So what you would have done before is written this down, and if I had told you this coupling, like in the NMSSM was 2, you would tell me, well, 2 is crazy because it's going to blow up before the gut scale.
Yeah, because there's already was a problem with this little hierarchy problem. Extension that you mentioned.
Correct.
That the self coupling of the these bosons is too weak.
That's right.
And one way people suggested that you should find that you had the signal field.
Exactly.
There are some other arguments why it is not totally acceptable.
Right, but here we see now that the role of a singlet, well, first of all, it's not an exact singlet, it's a composite. It turns into other fields at high enough energies. So all of the usual issues that I worry about with singlets, like destabilizing divergences, are gone here. They don't exist, because you really know what the theory is. This coupling can be as large as you like, up to some reasonable value, meaning it can be of order 2 or 3. In fact, I'll show you examples where it is this. That means then that the quartic coupling of the Higgs is going to be dominated by this coupling and not by the gauge couplings, which then means the Higgs mass can be as heavy as you like. And it's a supersymmetric theory. Okay. All right, I've gone ahead of myself, but sort of, no problem, just in the interest of answering the question. So let me show you, again, let me give you a picture, just so you have this in your mind of what I have and what's going on here. So again, there is some SU2 technicolor theory. It gets strong at a scale lambda technicolor here. I go from this fundamental description of these T's to a composite description of these M's, which turned out to be just H up, H down, and a singlet. Okay. So this is just like going from quarks to pions, okay, just analogously, but now in new physics. There's a series of spectator fields that sit up near lambda technicolor. And then here's the rest of the spectrum of the Higgs sector of this spectrum. Namely, there will be Higgs masses that sit around lambda V, soft masses that will be less than that, as we'll see, and GV, which is the usual W and Z mass. Okay. You see that for this spectrum to go, lambda actually has to be larger than G, and we'll see that's exactly the case that I'm going to work with. Okay. Okay, I know I'm probably beginning to come up on a barrier that is going to be insurmountable. Okay. So that's good. Okay. Sorry, just give me a moment. So let's look specifically at what happens with, let's just stop right there, at electroweak breaking. So as I said, the superpotential, which just had H up, H down minus V naught squared, all in brackets, forced H up and H down to get an expectation value of order V naught. V naught is, again, not written here, but is the supersymmetric mass M times the technicolor scale, all divided by 4 pi squared. The square root of all that is V naught. Okay. No supersymmetry breaking, this is what you get. If I add some amount of supersymmetry breaking, for example, you add soft masses for H up, H down, and N, then you find that these expectation values look like this. Okay, so it's actually V naught, but now scaled by an amount proportional to the soft breaking. Turn off the soft breaking, get back V naught, just like it should up here. Okay, but this is the interesting and sort of crucial expression. It means then that I actually want the soft breaking to be smaller than this lambda V naught squared, not too large, otherwise it's not going to go. Which is just the statement that I have this potential, which has a minimum away from the origin. And if I add positive soft breaking mass squareds, eventually they get large enough to pull up the potential, and so you don't break electroweak symmetry. So this actually limits the size of SUSY breaking that one would want to do here.
Okay.
Yes, but here there's no radiative breaking. These things are positive masses, and it's no problem. Yeah. Okay. So with this expression, then, you can see clearly that there is no tuning in this model. So if you just write out what the expectation value would have been in something like this, here's the total expectation, also the sum of V up squared, V down squared. And it looks like this. It's lambda squared V naught squared minus M tilde squared all over lambda squared. Forget about the sine 2 beta for a minute, okay? If I just turn off M tilde and then the lambdas cancel out, I get back V naught the way it should be. Again, up to this factor of 2 gets absorbed in sine 2 beta. Okay? But what this means is that I'm no longer tuning a soft mass squared against some supersymmetric mass and getting some number. It's that actually it's this quantity minus this divided by lambda squared. And if lambda's order a few, it suppresses this soft mass piece. Not only that, but I can actually just turn this off. It doesn't have to be larger than some number. I can turn it right off and I get back V naught. So there really is no tuning in the model to get out electroweak symmetry breaking. Okay. What does it look like? What would you, so, all right, this is fine, this is good. It's a model which you would solve the supersymmetric little hierarchy problem with the Lett paradox. What would you look for? Okay. Okay, here's, let's get a little bit more concrete. There we go. So let me now just plug in numbers for this potential and show you what the hierarchy really looks like. I've been arguing that the Higgs mass can be arbitrarily large, but sort of useful to see this in specific values. Here's this coupling lambda that I had before, and it's 3. It's large. But of course, it has to be large because what happens is, as I renormalize upward, it's going to hit a Landau pole. That pole is, in fact, exactly where the strong dynamics is and takes over after that point. Tan beta, some number, and then the Suzy breaking, 400 GeV here. Okay. The hierarchy, or the hierarchy of the, sorry, the spectrum of the scalar masses looks like this. So there's the Higgs itself is now sitting at something like 350 GeV. Okay, this is the Higgs where SM means it's standard model like its couplings are meaning sine 2 beta is nearly 1. Okay, for this. Then Charse Higgs, the neutral, CP even, and then CP odd at the top. Okay. Here are other spectra with lambda of 2, 200 GeV for the soft breaking. And this is what it looks like. In all of these cases, the Higgs is actually larger than 200 GeV. But there's actually no particular limit on how heavy you can make this. So there's two important things to observe about this. First of all, the lightest Higgs could be much heavier than what you would have found in supersymmetry, in the MSSM. Okay, that's the first thing. The second is that this pseudoscalar, A0, is always heavier than the charged Higgs. Okay? You can see this in these spectra. Those who have worked with the Higgs sector of supersymmetry hopefully will remember that it's always inverted in the MSSM. In the MSSM, the charged Higgs is always heavier than the pseudoscalar. Okay, so this is a way to test it. If you really had a high enough energy collider, like a linear collider, and you found these states, you could, you know, rule out the MSSM at this point and at least allow for this being a possibility. Okay. All right, there's a series of things from this point that one can do. And, you know, I've emphasized that there is no particular bound on the Higgs mass. Let me sort of show you that in particular. It's sort of fun to see this, if I can find the transparency. Okay. So here it is. So the value of the Higgs mass depends on where the scale of strong dynamics is. Obviously, as the scale of strong dynamics gets much, much higher, then the nature of this being a composite makes less and less difference to the model. And so the value of the Higgs mass goes down. Okay. So this is just coming about from the renormalization of this lambda coupling from order 4 pi down to some number at the weak scale. But you see, you can go to, say, 450 GeV and still have the strong dynamic scale being, say, like 10 TeV, which is out of reach of, or out of the concern area that you would have had with electroweak precision constraints. Okay. All right, so that gives you a feeling for this. Now, the kinds of things that you would then worry about, for example, is with this point in which I said the Higgs mass is 350 GeV, isn't that inconsistent with electroweak precision itself? Because obviously, we know from these ST plots that the Higgs mass tends to be constrained to be lighter. And that the usual lore is that in supersymmetry, all of these things decouple. And of course, we're already going into a limit in which the superpartners have to be heavy. They'll be forced this way. So, you know, how could this possibly be consistent? Well, let me just sort of flash this to give you a feeling for what it looks like. Okay, so we actually computed the electroweak precision corrections in this model in the sense of adding just the pieces associated with the charged Higgs CP even CP odd scalars, okay, just that sector, and then calculated what is the corrections to S and T. And here's what it looks like. Okay, what I've drawn are trajectories for varying lambda, this coupling from 2 to 3. this point 360 right here is in fact exactly that point that I showed, or the spectrum I showed that was on the far left-hand side before. So this is the one that has this 360 GeV Lyas Higgs. And you see that it's actually sitting right within the contours of S and T. Okay. What happened here is that, yes, the Higgs mass is heavy and it tend to sort of push you down on this usual trajectory of the standard model, but then the contributions from the charged and neutral Higgs pull you back up to this point. And the fact that it pulls you up is because they're relatively light, and they had to be light because of the nature of the model, because of the nature of these scales. Okay. So there are at least self-consistent solutions one can see here where it's completely consistent with electroweak precision. Okay. I fear because of the time, I should probably sort of wrap up at this point. There are all sorts of other things one can do. You can actually check things like gauge coupling unification, something that you might worry about with strong dynamics. And suffice to say, there's a simple way to see that it doesn't necessarily have to be a problem. In fact, if I had had just the two-flavor model, a model without this third flavor sort of sticking down, it has, in fact, exactly the same gauge coupling running as in the MSSM. So I can talk about that later if people are interested. But again, the lore that it has to be the MSSM to have gauge coupling unification up to a high scale clearly doesn't apply. Okay. All right. There are also fun things to do to explore supersymmetry breaking, and one can go ahead and implement a particular mechanism to do this. In this case, all that one really needs to do is to do something where you still have control over the soft breaking parameters. So it would be something that would be below the strong dynamic scale. And a very simple thing to do is to just do anomaly mediation, that is UV insensitive anomaly mediation. And this is something that we showed just a couple of days ago works, yesterday actually. Okay, so let me sort of conclude and give you a summary of where I went with all this. So what I presented was a new calculable theory, a UV complete theory, in which the Higgs is composite. In this theory, electroweak symmetry is dynamically broken rather than radiatively broken. The strong dynamics, the reason one can do this and have some control over it is ultimately goes back to Seiberg, because this is how we know about the superpotential that we write down, and that it confines, that it actually breaks electroweak symmetry in the first place. I show that the lightest Higgs mass is decoupled from supersymmetry breaking. Okay. In the MSSM, these are always tightly bound problems, okay? That if I want to raise the Higgs mass above some value, I've got to push the SUSY breaking masses above some number. So that, yeah, okay? So I always have this tension in the MSSM, which just doesn't exist here at all. Not only that, but you can imagine that the Higgs mass could be much heavier, and that, in fact, it could be a perfectly consistent fit with precision electroweak once you add in the corrections from lighter superpartners, from namely the charged Higgs and CP even, CP odd. Again, something I state without proof, but gauge coupling unification can work at least as well as how it works in gauge mediation, and that you can do SUSY breaking with something like UV insensitive anomaly mediation and get a spectrum, and it works fine. So, all right, that's it. Thanks.
Can I put this model into the parameter space where
yeah. You
find the Higgs boson at very small passing depths?
No, actually, what you'll find is the Higgs and supersymmetry, but it'll be lighter than what you would have thought.
Everybody would be about the discovery limit of LHC. That would be a tension for this model.
No, on the contrary. So here you could take all of the superpartners and sit them right at the collider bounds that exist today. You could not do that with the MSSM, because the stops, if I put them at the collider bounds of 150, 200 GeV, I would end up predicting a Higgs mass that's too light. It's in conflict with LEP. Here I don't have that problem.
But can the partners be heavy, or are you saying they need to be at the weak scale?
No, they actually need to be light in the following sense, in the sense that the for example, the Higgs masses, soft parameters to the Higgs masses, if they're too heavy, would cause this potential, which had a minimum away from the origin, would pull it up too high. So you cannot have that happen.
So what is too heavy? Sorry.
So what is
too heavy?
Right. Well, what I showed was, for example, one example where the soft braking was 400 GeV, and that was an example that worked. 200 GeV.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you saw what the charged Higgs and neutral. I can put that up again.
What is the critical value?
Ah, yes. Yeah. Sure. So what this really depends on is how fat I can make the Higgs, okay? How composite I can make. What's the lowest scale I can take, the technical or the strong dynamic scale? That will allow me to calculate the highest lambda coupling, and then the largest lambda coupling gives me the largest scale in the problem. Okay, so that's where the bound comes in. Now that number is probably, it's probably something like 500-ish GeV. So the Higgs sector, would not be beyond these numbers, is what I'm saying.
I'm sorry,
GeV. Sorry, did I say?
Okay, so this is.
I meant so GeV.
The whole model exists within the range of ALHC. It doesn't. It's not just dipping down into.
Yeah, consistency requires that.
Yeah.
You have physics within the range of ALHC.
Right.
That was my question. And the answer to this question is yes.
Yeah. Uh huh. Yeah.
Basic reason why anomaly mediation works here
a little bit. Ah, yes. Okay. So anomaly mediation doesn't work in the first place because it's lepton masses. You can solve lepton masses by adding D terms for hypercharge and U1B minus L. That will fix it up. When you do that and you allow in the MSSM, when you do that and you take tan beta larger than 1, you find that you cannot get a vacuum solution that is stable. You can't find one. There's a conflict, really, between getting stable vacuum and getting lepton masses positive. You can take tan beta less than one, and this will work, but it actually turns out you need to take tan beta of about 0.29 is the value, and there's a place where this works. Okay, it's a highly fine-tuned spectrum, but it's one that actually turns out to go. But as those who know a little bit about the MSSM, if you take tan beta less than about 1.5, it means the top Yukawa is too large at the weak scale and it will blow up at the gut scale. And most people usually think about, you know, perturbative theory going all the way to the gut scale. So now you can go to this theory. Here, there's no longer a restriction on this, on the top Yukawa, because that comes from the operators that I would write in the theory that basically decompose at the technicolor scale. Okay. So that's gone. So I can take tan beta less than 1. Secondly, the model with a single singlet, with a linear term in the singlet, as opposed to a cubic term, for curious reasons, will work, and you can find a stable vacuum in this case where you cannot find it with an S cubed piece. In when you actually have an explicit mass parameter in the theory. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. 5-minute break.